It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, D-Bro, joined at the hip, as always, by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. On today's show, we're going to cover our bust players at each position. Before jumping into the show, I want to take a second to say thank you to everyone for the amazing support the podcast and FadeTheNoise.com have received since launch. Adam, what is up, dude? This has been overwhelming, fantastic. The energy is flowing. I mean, I'm ready for us to go three episodes a week. How you been, man?
Yeah, man, it's been fun. Site launched last Tuesday. Immediately, first day, had over 100 pieces of content, and we had, because of the great support and all the hard work from everybody, writers, editors, you know, behind the scenes, everything. Yeah, it's just really exciting to finally, after months of, you know, excitement and planning, to have this, you know, out there for everybody to check out. And I mean, anything you could pretty much think of in terms of content we've had over the last week.
All the sites are live. I think the only one that we have left to drop is FTN Data. But yeah, man, I mean, we're covering you, whether it's DFS, season long, betting, all the things. Like we're saying, last week we talked about our breakout players for this year. So this week we are going to go through our bust guys. Adam, kick us off. Who are the bust quarterbacks? I know we're on the same page with this. Who are the guys that you're looking to stay away from this year?
Yeah. Ryan Tannehill was obviously, like, really, really impressive last year and was a big reason why the Titans made so much noise and made that run. He's, because, even though he was the number two quarterback in fantasy after he took over behind Lamar Jackson, like, it's not like his ADP has spiked up to where it's hard for me to call him, like, a bust. He's more of a stay away just because I think there's going to be some regression here. Like we talked about last week, the Titans are going to throw the ball a lot more this year, but, I mean, if you look at Tannehill's numbers, so 19.6% of his passes were in tight windows. They were aggressive, according to NFL Next Gen stats. That was one of the highest rates in the league. He also averaged over 6 yards after the catch per completion, second highest mark in the league. So, like, he was making, when he wasn't throwing screens or anything, he was making really aggressive tight window throws that got completed at a high rate. I mean, his completion percentage was massive. It was over 70%, and he was also an aggressive quarterback. So, I think that comes down a bit. He was third in ADOT. He just had a really insanely efficient year where I'm expecting that to come down. I still don't love the offensive weapons outside of A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith, and this is still Derrick Henry's offense. So, again, it's not like he's all of a sudden come up to, like, a quarterback top 10 guy being drafted, but I would rather take guys we talked about last week, like Daniel Jones, Gardner Minshew, those guys, Joe Burrow over Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think for me, the biggest thing is talking about Tannehill's efficiency. We have to talk about his touchdown percentage, too. I mean, the guy was at 7.7%. And if you look back, even over the last few years, like 2014 to 2018, you had 9 quarterbacks. We're talking about regression, and he's going to ball back to the mean somewhat. In those few years, you had 9 quarterbacks finish with 7% or higher touchdown percentage. Each one of those guys fell the following year, and by average of like 3%. So we're even talking about the volume is questionable. We think that's going to bounce back. But even the touchdowns, if he doesn't counteract it with a ton of volume, if the touchdowns come down, which historically it's going to happen, it's a question more of it, like how much and not if, then I think Tannehill is a guy that I'm going to stay away from.
Yeah.
On to another guy that we're both kind of like off of, and I know this entire offense, hell, this team has gotten a lot of just bad press. Like, I think the collective of Twitter was just trashing them after the NFL draft. But tell me your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers for this year.
It sucks because I've always been a Rodgers fan, and I still think the people that sit there and say he's not good anymore are just wrong. But I just, he's not in a great situation to be that guy in fantasy that he was again. He was the quarterback 10 last year, but on a points per game basis, he was QB 14. And, like, what the hell are they doing? Like, they didn't draft a receiver. They brought in Devin Funchess, who I guess is the best thing they have outside of Devontae Adams at receiver, maybe Alan Lazard. But it's just weird that they didn't add anybody. Rodgers, obviously, his numbers weren't great last year. 22nd in deep completion rate, 25th in pressured completion rate. And it's not even just the fact that they didn't bring in receivers. Like, Matt LaFleur has continued to be a guy that wants to run the football, and they clearly didn't show that they were going to change that during the draft when they took A.J. Dillon in the second round. So last year, or 2018, before Matt LaFleur went there, the Packers called passes 67.5% of the time. That was a league-high percentage. Last year, it dropped to 59.8%, so a huge drop-off. That was 16th in the NFL, so just they went from the pass-happiest league team in the NFL to, you know, slight, like an average pass rate team. He's got to be more efficient if he keeps losing volume, and I just don't, as good as I think he still is, outside of throwing to Devontae Adams 12, 13 times a game, I don't see if he's going to be really efficient. So just, you know, doesn't run a whole lot, just not a lot of upside with Aaron Rodgers for me. And yeah, I hope they maybe trade for David Njoku or something, but I don't know. They clearly haven't wanted to give Rodgers any help outside of Devontae Adams, so.
No, and I agree, and I think a lot of this is you see the weapons around him just cratering. Like, they've just fallen off the map the last 2 years, and his touchdown percentages for a quarterback, he's never been a high-volume guy. He's only had been the top 10 in passing attempts in 4 of his 12 seasons as a starter, so it's not the volume that's carried Rodgers to this point. It's efficiency and touchdowns and these high, crazy high touchdown percentages. And when the weapons have fallen off, he's gone to 4.2 and 4.6%. And I don't think that bounces back this year. So much like we're talking about Tannehill, but in a different aspect, the volume's not necessarily there because of everything you touched on. And I don't see the touchdowns being there. Even if you want to get like really, really optimistic, who in the heck is going to catch touchdowns in the passing game?
Yeah.
Like, outside of Adams and what, Aaron Jones?
Like, but say like, Rodgers, say Rodgers throws, I don't know, 28 touchdown passes this year. You got to think Adams is going to have, what, 12? And then, like, where else are they going? Like, I feel like if Rodgers is going to have a above average fantasy season, one of Jay Sternberger or, Alan Lazard or one of these guys has to just come out of nowhere, or they're just their Packers, either that or the Packers just somehow can't run the football and their defense falls apart. Like, I just don't see those happening. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, Rodgers, and God forbid if anything happens to Devontae Adams, then I mean it's a mess for quarterbacks. It was tough because there's the position's so deep in the first place, mm-hmm, that you're not going to find a lot of busts. But I wanted to ask you, because I was thinking about it when we were making our lists. If you had to pick somebody that's kind of in the consensus top 10 that you think could bust, you know, I don't think anybody thinks like Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, maybe just in terms of ADP, you think Lamar Jackson could bust. But like, if you had to pick somebody in that top 10, like the big three of Mahomes, Lamar, and Dak, then you add Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Kyler, Josh Allen, Brady, those guys. Like, if you had to pick one of those guys who you think would bust, who would you pick? Because I tried to pick one just to kind of be different, but I just couldn't make a case for somebody really.
No, and that was the same thing. I mean, we were talking about it before we turned the mics on. With quarterbacks, it's so hard to go with bust because it's kind of ingrained in our DNA to go with late-round quarterbacks and redraft. And if you're looking at a lot of these top-end guys, they feel so safe this year. Like, I can make a case for Lamar Jackson being a bust at his ADP, but outside of that, like, I mean, you're splitting hairs here. I guess if I have to lean one guy and it really comes down to volume, touchdown expectations, and just efficiency and age, I probably would pick on Drew Brees. But even that is a tough case to make. You're really leaning on, okay, does Alvin Kamara bounce back with the touchdowns this year? And we've seen the volume just fall off a map, like with them going more run heavy, with Brees getting older. I know some of it had to do with the thumb injury last year and basically what they asked him to do. But could those things, you know, happen again this year in 2020? I could see it.
Yeah.
And I could definitely think that he could end up lower. Like, he could still have the boom weeks, but those could be much farther apart than we've seen in previous years.
Brees and Josh Allen, and like, surprisingly enough, I don't think Josh Allen's going to bust. But the more I think about it, like, okay, biggest downfall of the Bills offense last year, other than, you know, the Josh Allen inconsistencies with his deep ball, was the fact that Frank Gore just gave them nothing and they kept going to him. If Zach Moss can be even, you know, 50% better than what Frank Gore was at the goal line, that'll take away from Josh Allen's 9 rushing touchdowns. Because as a Bills fan, like I watched, he had like 3 of his rushing touchdowns from Frank Gore not getting it on 2nd and 3rd down, and on 4th and 1, Allen would just sneak it in. Now, they could still easily do that because he's so good in that role. But if Zach Moss is more, you know, polished as a, and just better as a short yardage back, then that'll take away from the rushing. But then you could also make the case that, okay, if the rushing numbers come down, but Stephon Diggs' presence helps the passing numbers, then maybe it balances out. And I do think the Bills are going to open up the playbook for Josh Allen a lot more in year 3. But those were the 2 guys that stood out to me as well. And then Drew Brees, you mentioned, we'll talk more about that when we get to tight ends, but that factor of the running game for the Saints scoring more touchdowns is why I pretty much just gave it away, but why I'm a little hesitant to draft a certain pass catcher from New Orleans.
Yeah, and speaking of New Orleans players, I mean, a former Saint now moved over to Baltimore. I got to hear your thoughts because I was really surprised when I saw Mark Ingram's name here on the show sheet. Tell me what you think for Ingram in 2020.
For me, Mark Ingram is like an ideal zero RB guy. Like, you go receiver, you go tight end, maybe you get Kittle in the 3rd or Mahomes or someone, and then you're all of a sudden needing a running back. And Mark Ingram's going to be fine. Like, he's not going to be bad. He fits the offense really well. He played really well last year. I just think there's going to be massive, massive touchdown regression coming. He had 5 receiving touchdowns last year. Heading into his first year with Baltimore, he had 5 receiving touchdowns in his career. And that was in New Orleans, who have been the staple for pass-catching backs and just, you know, maximizing their ability in the passing game in the NFL since Drew Brees has been there. So that's coming way down. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't score a single receiving touchdown this year. That's strike number 1. They also didn't, like, give him a huge workload. Like, he averaged around 13.5 carries per game. That was despite playing in the run-heaviest offense in the NFL. I get it, obviously. Lamar Jackson took away, like, 11 carries per game himself. But even if you think Lamar Jackson's going to run less this year, he's still going to run the ball a ton. Like, they're not stupid. Greg Roman's not an idiot. Like, he's got touchdown equity just in terms of rushing because he was among the league leaders with 13 goal line carries last year. But then you add the J.K. Dobbins wrinkle. I mean, Gus Edwards averaged over 8 carries per game last year, and J.K. Dobbins is a lot better than Gus Edwards, and they still spent a 2nd-round pick on him. So Ingram's a guy, like, if I get him as my running back 1, if I go really, really, you know, receiver, quarterback, tight end heavy in the beginning of my drafts, which I probably won't do, I'm okay with it, but I'm expecting him to score way less in terms of touchdowns, especially receiving touchdowns. And plus, J.K. Dobbins is still there, so.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors for Ingram. I think if you're going to fade Ingram, I think there's a few different ways, and I see what you're talking about. I mean, with Dobbins and what do they do in the passing game? Much less, Lamar Jackson only had 7, and I say only, but considering how many times he rushed the ball and how explosive he is, he only had 7 rushing touchdowns. That number, he could easily hit double digits this year.
Yeah.
And nobody would be surprised at all. And that's going to come out of Ingram's pocket more likely. Moving over to the running back that I do not want, I will not draft, I do not care, and oh my gosh. Part of this has, and I'll get it out of the way before I even get to his name, I can't stand Adam Gase. Like, he is the coffin nail for every single player he touches except for slot wide receivers. So I will not draft Le'Veon Bell in basically any format that I am playing this year. And people might sound surprised about that because they're all in on his volume and stuff, but come on, like, you've got to look back at what has happened to running backs in Gase's history, and this cannot be dismissed. If you want to look back to 2018, Kenyon Drake was not a thing, and he was eaten into. His role was eaten into by Frank Gore. If you look in the red zone, Drake had 12 touches versus Gore's 13. Bell is being taken as a top 20 back right now, and everybody's in on the volume and the offensive line being better. But for Adam Gase, when they get in close, he likes to pass it, and he likes to throw to the slot wide receivers. I mean, 2018 to 2019, his running backs only totaled 9 rushing attempts inside the 5. That is insanely good. Yeah, that's a 2-year span.
Wasn't that 1 year in Miami where Jay Ajayi was getting, like, legitimate volume, but he just didn't score? Like, he was like, I'm going to look that up, actually, while you're talking, because I'm pretty sure Jay Ajayi, like, people were talking about it, like, this dude had no goal line carries, despite, like, Jay Ajayi was pretty productive that in his final year in Miami. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a lot of yardage. And just to give some context to this, even last year, so I was talking about the two previous years for Gase and rushing totals inside the five. 16 running backs just last year alone had more than that, had more than 9 rushing attempts inside the five. So if everybody's talking about Bell's going to bounce back as far as touchdown equity, man, if he bounces back, it is not much, and I do not predict that as to be coming, much less I really think Le'Veon Bell is on his last legs. He's an aging running back, and no, it's not injuries, but it's effectiveness. I mean, everybody wants to talk about how bad the offensive line was last year, and I'm not saying it was good, because it definitively, it was not good.
Yeah, they were. I'm pretty sure they were dead last in yards before contact. Like, they were super bad.
They were really, really bad, but some of the onus of this has to go to Bell as well. He was 81st in yards created per touch. Among 44 running backs with 100 or more rushing attempts, you only saw Le'Veon Bell and Peyton Barber as the only two running backs out of that 44 that failed to rip off a 20-yard or longer run. And that has to be given some context because, yes, the offensive line is bad, but if you're not creating plays for yourself, if you're not breaking tackles, and you're not making something happen, even with the opportunities, because he was fed a ton of volume last year, that also has to be given context. Like, unless you're expecting this offensive line, because even if it's improved, unless you're expecting, Connor McGovern is not a monstrous run blocker. He's a great pass blocker, like top 5 in the NFL. But he's only top 30 as far as run blocking. And I know they added some other pieces to the offensive line, but unless you're expecting them to be a top 5, top 10 offensive line this year, then you're really giving out too much credence to two things. The offensive line being way, way better, and the volume definitively being there. And I don't even know if the volume is going to be there, because now you have Gore and you have a LaMichael Perine who they sunk a 4th-round pick into, and it might not sound like a ton, but it's enough for Gase to say, well, we were getting close to the goal line. How about I give it to him? How about I siphon off some of this supposed volume for Bell? 5 touches for Frank Gore. 5 touches for LaMichael Perine. So now you're looking at Le'Veon Bell and his 20 to 22 touches per game, and you've got 10 of them siphoned off to other running backs, and his touchdown equity is falling. I do not want to touch Le'Veon Bell, and I sure as heck will not draft him as a top 20 running back this year. But
I'm more
other thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm more like lukewarm on him than you are. Like, if I got him as like my running back 2, okay. Like, I think the big thing with him is the receiving. If he can continue to be, you know, involved in the passing game as much as he's been, like last year, he was still like a decent floor guy, which is not exciting, especially because he was like a 3rd-round, 2nd-round pick last year. Frank Gore at this stage of his career should not be somebody that, oh, they signed Frank Gore, that's going to take away from things, as great as Frank Gore has been. But it is, especially when it's Adam Gase, who clearly brought in Frank Gore in Miami and gave him work over Kenny and Drake. And that 2016 season was where J.J. had a big year. He was 22nd in carries from inside the 5 with 7. Damien Williams had 6. Like, that's a little concerning when it's Adam Gase, who, like you said, over in the last handful of years, just has been among the league worst in rushing touchdowns. So I don't think Le'Veon's, like, a complete avoid for me, but he's not anyone that you're like, oh, yes, I got Le'Veon Bell, which is weird because he was, like, the guy when he was with Pittsburgh. Obviously, it's a completely different situation, and he just doesn't look like the same player. I expect the blocking to be better, but I think the big thing that's going to play a factor with Le'Veon this year is how much he's used in the receiving game, because the Jets, they added some guys, they lost some guys. They still don't have that clear-cut number one. It'll probably be Jamison Crowder, but he's not, like, he's not an alpha in an offense. So that's the big thing with Le'Veon for me.
Yep, and speaking of Crowder, moving over to wide receivers, who is your wide receiver you got to stay away from this year?
I could be completely wrong about this. I don't see let me take that back. He's a really, really good young player. He came on last year and emerged, but Courtland Sutton is a guy that I don't think I've drafted once this offseason, and not because he's not a good player, but and maybe this is just, like, lazy analysis, I just think Jerry Jeudy's going to win out as a number one receiver by, you know, halfway through the season. I think Jerry Jeudy's just a better player. And you add the fact that Courtland Sutton, when Drew Lock took over, wasn't even, like, as good as people think he was. A lot of his production came before Drew Lock was the quarterback. And we still have, you know, as much as people think Drew Lock should break out this year, it's still very much up in the air. I just think the where he's being drafted, like, guys around him, there's a lot of guys I'd rather take at his around his ADP. And I think the fact that you have Noah Fant, who's expected to take another jump in his second year, you add Melvin Gordon, not only in the running game, but in the passing game, and they got nothing out of their slot receivers last year. Let's remember that. Emmanuel Sanders was there the first part of the season, got traded to the Niners, and then they had Deshaun Hamilton did nothing out of the slot. It was literally just Cortland Sutton in that passing game. Now they have Jerry Jeudy, who can play the slot if they have to. And then, of course, they add KJ Hamler, who's probably going to primarily play the slot. So if they have anything out of the slot this year, that's gonna impact Sutton as well. So I just think there's guys going around him that I would rather have.
No, and I don't disagree at all. I mean, he's going currently wide receiver 19 in best ball right now.
That's too high for me. He's like my wide receiver 27. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just – I'm just not going to draft him. I'm not going to have him on any teams.
Well, and let me get this out there, because I do think that more volume is coming for this Broncos passing offense. But really this comes down to how good is Drew Lock and how high can his weapons go? Like, can he support? Because everybody is in on this Broncos passing offense. And I'm like, I just got to pump the brakes here for a second, because – if Lock, even if the passing attempts go up, everybody's like, oh, I love Noah Fant. A certain amount, KJ Hamler is looked at as a sleeper. People are like, I really, really like Jerry Jeudy. And it's like, can Drew Lock support any of these weapons?
Hell no.
All of these weapons? Like,
he's not supporting. He's not supporting more than two of these guys. I don't know. I'm not really on the Denver train either. Like, why would you take Cortland Sutton over DJ Chark or Robert Woods or Terry McLaurin? Like, mm-hmm. I will take those guys 100 times out of 100 over Cortland Sutton. I don't even think it's close. I think I'd rather take AJ Green over Cortland Sutton, which I might be by myself on that. I think Sutton's targets are going to be really inconsistent on a weekly basis.
No, and I agree. And it's funny you bring up those names, because the wide receiver 21, 22, and 23, you have DJ Chark, Terry McLaurin, and Tyler Lockett. I would happily take any one of those yep. wide receivers over Sutton, and they're all going in the fifth round, but I'll lean to the other wide receivers that either have a path as the alpha in their offense, unquestioned alpha, and a higher target volume, and some of them you're getting better, if not the same level of quarterback play, but less target competition.
Would you rather take Sutton where he's going, or wait like a round or two and take either of the Texans receivers?
I would wait a few rounds. Yeah, I would take Will Fuller. Like, yeah. I think that I've been on the Fuller train. I'm not getting off that train. I feel like his ADP will never, ever, 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 ever match his upside, because people are so scared and they want to talk about his injuries, and that's the only thing they see with Will Fuller.
Even Hollywood Brown is going later. Like, he could be viewed as boom or bust, but remember, like, he was really good before he got hurt, and he's going to play in probably the run-heaviest offense again, but he's... if he's healthy, he's going to be the 1A or 1B with Mark Andrews in an offense that's going to score a lot of points. Like, he, even in a lower, potentially lower volume passing offense, he could still see the same amount of targets per game as Sutton. And we know the upside is there with Hollywood Brown. I just think Sutton is where he's going. I can get guys with a safer projection for targets, like a DJ Chark or Robert Woods or McLaurin. And then later I can get similar targets, but similar upside.
Well, and to stay on the same tier of wide receivers, the wide receiver 24 in best ball at the moment that I find myself, I'm just going in different directions. I probably will have zero exposure this year, and in years past, I've been big on is Keenan Allen. I think a lot of this, yes, we could talk about Tyrod Taylor all we want to, and his 3 years as a starter in Buffalo, and the fact that he's averaging 449 passing attempts per 16 games. It really comes down to volume, and it comes down to Keenan Allen has needed that volume to be what he's been in previous years, and even drafting him as your wide receiver two, I'm not comfortable in doing that, because with his target shares, he had a 25 and 27% target shares in the years that, like, out of the last 3 years, two of those were without Hunter Henry. With Hunter Henry, that's where it's been still. And if you're looking at Tyrod Taylor, even if Allen maintains the 25% target share, like if ascending Mike Williams and Hunter Henry being back and Austin Eckler, if any of these guys do not eat into his target share, even at all, at Turod's previous volume expectations, because I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to throw more than 500 passing attempts. But even if you wanted to put a 25% target share on Allen and say Turod throws 450 times, you're looking at 112 targets. And for a wide receiver that has not scored more than 6 touchdowns since 2013, I just can't take Allen at that point. Like, there's no way that I can do that, not considering the other wide receivers that are going around him, the other wide receivers that are going even after him. I don't think that he is going to get the targets. He's going to get the touchdown expectations to sit here and outkick whatever volume that he loses going from Rivers to Taylor. But I'm curious, would you be willing to draft Allen as your wide receiver 2? Because I can't do it. Like, if he was my wide receiver 3, fine. But as my wide receiver 2, I am not going to lean on him every single week.
Yeah. It's the other thing, too, is you mentioned Tyrod in Buffalo, and you got to remember who the head coach of this team is. It's Anthony Lynn, who's the offensive coordinator in Buffalo for a lot of those years. Like, he knows what he's going to get from Tyrod, which is why I think as long as the Chargers don't suffer the same injury bug they seemingly suffer every year, their defense is really good. They should be able to compete in games enough to where we may not even see Justin Herbert. And if that's the case, then, you know, instead of taking that 6-yard out or slant to Keenan Allen when the play breaks down, Tyrod will just run. And I think Allen is still going to be good when he gets the ball, but, you know, for a guy that you've wanted receptions for, like, the volume's going to come down. They're not going to be a pass-first offense. And Tyrod is a guy that you would think Keenan Allen would be the guy he would lean on, because Tyrod does not force throws into tight coverage. He never has. And Keenan Allen's one of the premier route runners in the league. But I just worry about Austin Ekeler there taking catches away, and the fact that I just think if Anthony Lynn can help it and this defense stays healthy and plays well, which they should, like you said, there's just not going to be a ton of volume here, especially when, you know, Rivers, people don't talk about it because of Jameis, but Rivers threw a ton of picks last year too and gave them extra possession. So I think Allen is a high wide receiver 3, really low end 2. Just, and it's not even just because of Keenan Allen and the change in offense. Just wide receivers are so deep.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. So I know we kind of buried the lead and getting to your next guy here with our Drew Brees talk and stuff, but why are you off of Jared Cook this year?
Again, the theme has been touchdown regression today, I guess, and I just think Jared Cook's touchdowns are coming down because Alvin Kamara's and Latavius Murray's in the running game. They're going up. You know, Jared Cook really came on and was really quietly super consistent last year down the stretch, but I just think the fact that they didn't have anything at receiver after Michael Thomas will change this year with Emmanuel Sanders. We talked about it last week. I think the presence of Emmanuel Sanders gives them at least something consistent at wide receiver 2 that they haven't had in a while, because Tre'Quan Smith, Ted Ginn, these dudes are not consistent guys. They're boom or bust. Emmanuel Sanders is going to give them something consistent each week. That's going to take away from Jared Cook's targets, and if I think his touchdowns are coming down, then he's going to need more targets, and I don't think that's happening. So, you know, Cook had the most end zone targets among all tight ends last year. Again, I think that's coming down because I think Alvin Kamara is going to have a much better season in the touchdown department. And that's mainly why. I don't think Cook's like a bad pick if you go really late at tight end. But, you know, we talked about some of the breakout tight ends last week. You know, Irv Smith, your boy who we talked about, you're not drafting him as a starter. But if you're also not drafting Jared Cook as a starter, just give me the guy who could break out and potentially be a top 5 tight end.
Yeah, and I think a little bit more on Jared Cook is, if you look at it from an efficiency standpoint, he was awesome last year. Like, this was basically a career year for him. He's not going to get back to 9 touchdowns. This is a guy that has never been a touchdown scorer in his entire career. I mean, his career high before last year was 6. His yards per target just spiked through the roof. He was at 10.8. Even if you look at, like, previous years when he was upper echelon, he's only hit above 8.9 one other time in his entire career. So you're talking about increased target competition. Because seeing as he's a guy that only got 65 targets last year, I don't think that number's going up. Not if Emmanuel Sanders continues. And I'm a big Manny Sanders guy, considering I baited him last year and I was like, all right, I'm just leaving him for dead. And he came back just monstrously and said, look, I'm still here, man. I'm still here. And he was able to get off the line versus, man, press. He was able to play on the outside as much as in the slot. I'm not going to fade him this year. And I'm not going to fade his ability to still be effective and eat into Jared Cook's role. And so if we're talking about other players coming into the building to eat into tight end targets and their roles, then I've got to mention Darren Waller here, because he is a guy that I will not have exposure to this year because of the fact of, one, he's going in the fifth round. People are taking him as the tight end five in multiple formats. And I cannot pay that price for Darren Waller. Not for a guy that I feel like was in the perfect storm situation last year. If you look at even, because I'm going to get to all the things and stuff they added this year in the draft and what have you. But even if you look at a healthy Hunter Renfrow, last year, six-game sample when Renfrow really came on down the stretch, so weeks 9 through 12, and then when he came back in week 16 and 17, Renfrow was averaging 6.8 targets per game. And if you look at Waller, what he did in the beginning of the season and when Renfrow went out, so in weeks 1 through 8 and 13 through 15, with either Renfrow slowly mingling into the target pie and when he missed games, Waller was at 8.3 targets per game. Now, in that six-game sample that I was talking about with Renfrow a second ago, Waller's targets dropped to 5.6. And so for everybody that's looking at Waller as a guy that's going to lead the Raiders in targets, I'm just not there. And I don't see a way that I'm going to get there. And looking at Darren Waller, yes, I know he's a mismatch. And yes, I think he is an immensely talented player. But there are also other talented guys that they have added all offseason. They drafted Bryan Edwards. They drafted Lynn Bowden. They spent a first-round pick on Henry Ruggs. We know Tyrell Williams last year was dealing with nagging injuries. So if all these different factors, if the stars align and all of these guys are going to siphon targets away from Darren Waller, and if you're looking at comparable roles, like Henry Ruggs, people are talking about him as just being a deep threat. I think if you look at how this passing game is being composed, they're looking at all of these guys as yak guys. They're looking at short area targets and let them create. And when you have more target competition, like all these players that I've mentioned, there is no way that I can sit here and say that Darren Waller is going to command the same target share that he's going to maintain, because he wasn't a touchdown scorer last year. So for anybody that wants to come at me and say, look, like Darren Waller's going to score more touchdowns, I would love to know the data point that you're basing that off of.
Bro, they added Jason Witten. Like,
yes.
Like, and Darren Waller had a 24% target share. It was top five amongst tight ends. But you mentioned the offense, how they're going to go about it with just short area targets. Like, it's 100% either way. Whoever's at quarterback, whether it's Derek Carr or he struggles or gets hurt, Marcus Mariota comes in. These are both guys who do not force throws at all. Derek Carr, 11% of his passes were in the tight windows last year. Second lowest rate in the league. Mariota was down there as well. That's why Hunter Renfrow being in the lineup, Darren Waller wasn't as good. He was not as good when Hunter Renfrow was in the lineup, and that's because Hunter Renfrow out of the slot just gets easy separation. He was top five among receivers in separation. Obviously, slot guys are going to be, you know, more productive in that regard, but Renfrow's not leaving the slot, and Henry Ruggs is not going to be just a guy that's going to run vertical routes. He's going to run screens. They're going to run, you know, jet sweeps with him. Waller, there's been drafts where he falls to, like, the eighth round, but whereas I don't really draft tight ends in that round. I either draft Kittle or Kelsey, or maybe Andrews in the top four rounds, or I just wait and get Hayden Hurst, or, you know, a lot of the tight ends we talked about, Mike Gesicki, like those guys. So Waller just kind of falls in that landing spot where I'm not drafting tight ends in terms of my roster construction at that point of the draft. Like, I'm just getting loading up on running backs and receivers, and then at some point, you know, around 8, 9, 10, whatever, I'll take my quarterback.
Absolutely. And I would much rather bet on trying to find this year's Darren Waller than pay for Darren Waller of 2019. Like, that, I would much rather try to project forward a guy that could walk into massive volume and possibly the perfect storm for this season, like we're talking about. I mean, we might as well just brand Mike Gesicki the FTN tight end. Like, there is not anybody on staff that I've heard or seen that's come out and said, like, I don't like Mike Gesicki. And he's a guy that I think could walk in and be the Darren Waller
paired him,
of this
paired
year.
Him with Kelsey and SFB. Love it.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So, we've gone through all of our bus players. That is it for this show. We are going to be back. This is the week where we go 3 episodes per week from now on. So we're going to be back later this week. We are now live on iTunes and all other podcast platforms. Wherever you consume podcast content, we are going to be there. So for Adam, I'm Derek. We're out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.